This is West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Beth Voorhees. The Brennan Center for Justice is a nonpartisan law and policy institute that often studies political and legal spending across the country. Yesterday, its representatives were at the state capitol to suggest to state lawmakers ways they can reform campaign finance reporting to make the process more transparent for you, the voter. Ashton Mara reports.
I know. You heard the words campaign finance and you immediately zoned out. It's a complicated, complex issue, but one that's relevant now more than ever. As candidates for West Virginia offices throw punches about where it is the quote-unquote dark money is coming from, whether it's the Koch brothers or a political action committee run by Nancy Pelosi, it's easy for you to get caught up in it all and confused. Are they telling the truth or are they throwing out allegations just to dig in on their opponent? Since the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision in 2010, states across the country have been working to reform the finance disclosure laws they have in place. The decision essentially allows corporations and unions to spend an unlimited amount of money on campaign ads for or against a candidate, meaning more money than ever is being dropped on political campaigns. Lawmakers in West Virginia considered a bill just last session to reform state campaign finance laws, but that bill ultimately failed. David Early, counsel with the Brennan Center, says there were some solid reforms in that bill the state should reconsider.
I think the most important thing is to ensure that the underlying donors are disclosed. So you can't hide behind an organization such as Mountaineers for Country Roads, and people have no idea who's really funding that, what they want, what they might be seeking from the legislature.
House Bill 4461 would have done just that, requiring the top donors to political committees be identified in television and radio ads. It would have also expanded the electioneering communications window, regulated the transfer of funds between two entities when they were meant for a political purpose, and would have required the disclosure of a donation to the Secretary of State's office within 24 hours. You can blame the bill's failure on a myriad of things. A chemical spill that became the focus of much of the session, a contentious abortion bill that caused days of debate in the House, or lawmakers just not wanting to change the way they receive donations in an election year. Either way, Senate Judiciary Chair Corey Palumbo says the feelings just may be different next year.
I think most people are sensitive to how much money is being poured into politics and sensitive to the fact that the vast majority of the money that's coming in, at least seemingly to me, is coming in from sources that we have no information about.
But lawmakers just may be more likely to get behind the change if you, their constituents, do too. And Early says there are two major reasons why you should care.
First, they should just want to know who is trying to influence their votes and what's really going on in that ad you see on television.
Second, he says, you then have the power to keep your politicians in check.
Of course, people support candidates that already agree with their positions, right? But on the other hand, if one particular spender spent a substantial amount and a legislature seems to go out of his or her way to help them with a particular issue, I think the public should be concerned about that because, you know, the representatives should represent all of their constituents equally, regardless of whether they gave to them or not, and regardless of whether they supported them at the polls or not. It shouldn't be because someone spent $10,000 or $100,000 supporting a candidate that he or she gets special access and meetings and perhaps even bills and laws from our elected officials. Everyone should have an equal opportunity to participate in our democracy.
Still, Early says, there will always be people or groups looking for ways around the disclosure laws, which means the work will never be complete. Lawmakers will continually have to keep up with innovations in campaigning in order to make sure the system is as fair as it can be. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Mornings, coming up on 740. Cloudy skies today with a chance of rain. Temperatures in the 50s. Rain tonight. Lows in the upper 30s and 40s. And rain again on Wednesday. Highs remaining in the 50s. We'll look forward to mostly sunny skies on Thursday.
A couple of vehicle accidents to report. One vehicle accident northbound US 119 at Oakwood Road and Bridge Road. The other vehicle accident eastbound I-64 at mile marker 58 in Charleston. Please use caution if you're traveling in these areas.
Every October, author and West Virginia native Homer Hickam makes a trip home to West Virginia for the annual Rocket Boys Festival in Beckley. But he also makes a point to stop in his hometown of Colwood in McDowell County during his visit. Liz McCormick got the chance to sit down with Hickam and hear about his hometown, current work, and of course, Appalachia.
Homer Hickam grew up in the small town of Colwood, West Virginia, during the 1940s and 50s, when Colwood was a busy company town and Sputnik was first launched in space. It was his childhood experiences that inspired him to write his famously known memoir, Rocket Boys, later adapted into the film October Sky. Since then, Hickam has written an array of novels, including genres in science fiction, military, stories on Colwood, and much more. His newest work, just sent to his publisher, features a family legend about an alligator his mother raised in West Virginia in 1935, named Albert.
My dad said, "It's either me or that alligator, Elsie." And Mom, after a few days of thinking about it, said, "Okay, but we have to let Albert go back to Florida." And so they had this awe-inspiring, sometimes funny, sometimes sad journey from Colwood, West Virginia to Orlando, Florida.
Hickam says he first heard about his family's legend when he was a boy watching the television show Davy Crockett.
I was watching it back in the mid-1950s, and my mom walked in and looked and said, I know him, and turned around and walked out. And it turned out that she was looking at Buddy Ebsen, who later played Uncle Jed in Beverly Hillbillies.
Hickam says Ebsen and his mom dated when she went to Florida after graduating high school, but they later became friends. When she married Hickam's dad, Ebsen sent her a very interesting gift.
Buddy's wedding gift to my mom was that alligator. And so I started over the years to try to find out more about Albert, and ultimately it became a family legend about their journey.
Hickam's newest novel, Carrying Albert Home, should be available around fall of next year. Hickam resides with his wife, Linda, at their home in Alabama throughout most of the year. But during his annual trip back to West Virginia, Hickam says he always makes a stop to visit his hometown of Colwood. While Hickam says he's always happy to visit home, he says Colwood has drastically changed from the time he was a boy, and sadly not for the better.
Now, unfortunately, with the coal industry the way it is, Colwood is just a shell of what it used to be, and it's kind of sad. When I go there, McDowell County, the population is about a quarter, I think, now what it was when I grew up there. So obviously there are a lot of empty houses with trees growing up through them. The infrastructure has collapsed.
Although Hickam is concerned for his hometown, he says the people haven't lost faith.
The people there are strong, they're intelligent, and they are working hard trying to bring the county back to some semblance of what it used to be.
Hickam continues to make a point to visit home annually, and he hopes that through the scholarships he has available at Marshall University and Virginia Tech, that more kids in the coal fields will go to college. Apart from being an author, Hickam worked for NASA as an aerospace engineer for 17 years. Now he continues to show his love of space and rockets, not only through his writing, but by working at Space Camp in Huntsville, Alabama. Hickam is on the board of this STEM-based camp. He says they don't get enough West Virginia kids, but he does see many West Virginia teachers that attend workshops hosted by the camp. Hickam thinks educators in West Virginia and Appalachia who are involved in STEM teachings are doing a good job. He says, however, that ultimately success comes down to the commitment of teachers and parents rather than just the technologies available today.
In my Colwood school, my class, over 90% of my class went to and graduated from college. We didn't have computers. The teachers had nothing but books and a blackboard and a piece of chalk. Yet, when I graduated from high school, I was well prepared to go off to Virginia Tech to the engineering school, much better than a lot of the kids that were coming out of Richmond and Roanoke and Washington, D.C., and, you know, the big schools like that. Why? Because we had dedicated teachers, and we had parents who were fully engaged in the education process.
Hickam says after writing Rocket Boys, he never expected it to have the impact it's had on West Virginia and the Appalachians. And he's humbled so many people identify with his story.
When you write about West Virginia and the coal fields and so on, the easiest thing in the world is to write about the poverty and the hardship and the struggle and all that kind of thing. But what I write about is the optimism of the people and the good life that they have crafted in the coal fields of West Virginia and the pride that they have in the state.
Homer Hickam may no longer live in the state where he grew up, but he constantly recognizes and credits his West Virginia roots for making him who he is today. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.